In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
All righty, hour number three of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. So last week when the College Football Playoff Selection Committee came out with their rankings, Ohio State was one, Indiana was two, A&M was three, Georgia was four, Texas Tech was five, Oregon was six, Ole Miss was seven, Oklahoma was eight, Notre Dame was nine, Alabama was 10, BYU was 11, and then Miami was 12. Now, with that being said, BYU was not on the bracket, and Miami was not on the bracket because of the fact that you need to have two conference champion other winners in there. So last week, they had projected Virginia to win the ACC. They're ranked 18th, and then they had Tulane winning the other conference championship, which would be the American. They were ranked at 24th. So BYU and Miami were on the outside looking in. So when I look at the rankings tonight, I think there's a few things that you want to see. Does James Madison find the top 25? Does Duke find the top 25? And, you know, it won't matter for North Texas because North Texas plays Tulane. So if North Texas beats Tulane, North Texas will go to the playoff. If Tulane beats North Texas, Tulane will go to the College Football Playoff. But a big misnomer here is a lot of people think it's the four Power Four conference champions are guaranteed a spot in the College Football Playoff. Not true. It's the five highest ranked conference champions are guaranteed a spot. So Virginia right now is ranked 18th. Virginia is in front of Tulane, and obviously since James Madison, North Texas, and Duke weren't ranked, they're in front of all those schools. So it's simple. If Virginia beats Duke in the ACC championship game, Virginia is in. Virginia is going to be the 11th seed tonight, and Tulane's going to be the 12th seed tonight. But what happens if both those schools lose their conference championship games? Well, for Tulane, it wouldn't matter. North Texas would just jump into the top 25, and they would be in. So North Texas would be the 12, and they would be in, or maybe even the 11. But if you have, in the ACC, Virginia lose, well, Duke isn't currently ranked. So how are they going to decipher? And James Madison only has one loss of the season. James Madison or Duke, I think James Madison would get in. So we can live in a world, think about this. We can live in a world where James Madison and Tulane or James Madison and North Texas are two out of the five conference champion winners. Like, I thought it was a big deal last year. Because what did we say last year when it was guaranteed that a conference champion would get a bye? And I know that now has since changed. But last year, it was inconceivable that the G5 representative would take one spot away from the Power Four to get a bye, and Boise State had a bye. Then they changed that rule. So right now, it's the five highest-ranked conference champions. And you would just assume, right, you win the SEC, you're one of the five highest-ranked conference champs. You win the Big 12, you're one of the five highest-ranked conference champs. You win the Big 10, you're one of the five highest-ranked, you know, conference champs. You assume you win the ACC, like, that's the same thing. right? If you win the ACC, the Big 12, the SEC, or the Big 10, you'd be one of the five highest-ranked conference champs. But the way that this has kind of gone down this year, since Duke is so unexpected here with four losses, if Duke wins the ACC, are they going to put him in? Because I would think James Madison, in the committee's eyes, if you gave a ranking 2-3 weeks ago, they would be viewed as the better football team up against Duke. So there is a legitimate world that if Tony Elliott's squad doesn't take care of business up against Duke and James Madison goes out there and wins a Sun Belt, that you have the American and the Sun Belt both getting in the conference champ into the college football playoff. So I don't think we'll get much clarity on that tonight. It will be a talking point on the show, but I don't think you're going to see, and maybe you do, but like last week, Arizona was 8-3. Arizona, they beat Arizona State over the weekend. So what? They're going to fall out? Tulane was just holding on to a thread. They were 24th. So I don't think you're going to see in the top 25 ranking. Usually I don't care about the rankings. I just care what the bracket looks like. This week, I actually care about the rankings for a multitude of reasons. But one of them is to just see if they're going to kind of put it together here at the last second and give you a kind of a little let into how the sauce is made on what happens if Virginia loses the ACC. So I'm not going to anticipate that Duke nor James Madison is not on the bracket tonight, but even in the top 25. Now, here's the other thing I'm curious about, and this you will see tonight. So the last time we had one of these ranking shows come on out, Oklahoma was 8, Notre Dame was 9, Alabama was 10, BYU was 11, Miami was 12. So no disrespect to Utah, who was 13. No disrespect to Vanderbilt, who was 14. No disrespect to Texas, who was 16. Texas is going to move up. I'll be curious how far they move Texas up because Texas beat Texas A&M. But whether you think you have an argument or not, I just don't see with how this is going to play out this weekend and all the possibilities how this plays out this weekend, how Texas, how Vanderbilt, and how Utah find a way to get into the college football playoff. I don't. But I'll be curious, and I'm wondering your take on this, Stu. Alabama's now in the SEC championship game. Alabama had a late season loss to Oklahoma, and they went from, I think, the fourth team in the country all the way down to 10. Do you think the committee tonight rewards Alabama for getting to the SEC championship game? Now, they can't put them in front of Oklahoma because I would imagine that, right, they're going to pick and choose here, right, Stu? They're going to tell you head-to-head matters with Alabama and Oklahoma.
You know it.
But then when it gets to Miami and Notre Dame, if Notre Dame is in front of Miami, which it was 9-12 last week, then how is Hunter Yurchek going to talk his way out of that one? Like, so I'm
They'll
going
try.
To, like, that's why I thought today that there was a chance, Stu, that they would move Alabama up to 9 and move Notre Dame back and set the way for the argument next week to be Notre Dame-Miami if BYU doesn't win the Big 12 championship. Because if the Cougars of BYU win the Big 12 championship, I still think they're putting Texas Tech in because Texas Tech's going to move up to 4 tonight. So if BYU wins next week, I don't think they're going to toss Texas Tech out. And then I think Notre Dame and Miami are both out. But that's what's interesting. Like how they rank Oklahoma, Notre Dame, Alabama, BYU, and Miami tonight is going to be interesting. Now, Oklahoma won last week. Notre Dame won last week. Alabama won last week. BYU won last week. And Miami won last week. So do you anticipate any changes being made? And if there is going to be a change, I guess the only one I could see is Alabama jumping Notre Dame just because of the fact that they're in the SEC championship and Notre Dame obviously doesn't play in a conference championship because they're not in a conference. But I don't even know if that's going to happen tonight. So do you think, I know we're both in agreement that Alabama should be in front of Notre Dame.
Yes.
But do you think Alabama will be in front of Notre Dame when we get the rankings tonight?
I don't think they will. I still think it's going to be, like you said, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, Bama, BYU, Miami in that order. I think that is going to stay that way. And it's weird because they would almost need Alabama to be ahead of Notre Dame to set up. Like, if they lose to Georgia, even if it's close or whatever.
I still think they're getting in.
I think they get in, but I don't know if they could jump Notre Dame to get in.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I don't know how they would if they don't jump Notre Dame now, and if they lose on this weekend, how do you then jump Notre Dame?
Kick out the kick out the Irish, you're saying.
It's so strange. And like you said, they maybe they will do that, and maybe they'll make something up along the way, which I could see. But it's so fascinating. If they did change anything, I agree with you. It would be Alabama jumping Notre Dame. I think that's the most likely of any of the scenarios of a change this week.
Well, yeah, because you know what? You bring up a good point. Like, let's just say, hold on. I know now we're going to do this on the air where it makes it very confusing. But we're talking about how possibly Notre Dame and Miami could be left out. And I'm saying Alabama's definitely in, regardless of the SEC championship game. But Stu, if you're right, if they keep these rankings the way that they are, where Notre Dame is 9 and Alabama is 10, and then BYU beats Texas Tech, are they really going to keep Alabama out of the college football playoff?
And again, we're assuming they lose to Georgia, of course, in this scenario.
Yes.
But yes, yeah. I guess so, right? Like,
but if I compare the resume of Alabama and Notre Dame,
I agree.
Who has the better win? Alabama beat Georgia. What's Notre Dame's best win this year? USC?
Yeah.
Pitt?
It's not even close.
So this is what I don't understand. Like, and we were both on this a few weeks ago when after Alabama lost to Oklahoma. And Stu's a Notre Dame fan, right?
That's me.
But
yep.
How is Alabama behind Notre Dame? And this is where the committee has lost me. Okay, so you're telling me head-to-head matters, right? Oklahoma and Alabama, they had the same record last week. They still have the same record this week. Oklahoma's 8, Alabama's 10. So you're telling me head-to-head matters there, but you're going to move Notre Dame in front of Alabama when Notre Dame doesn't have a better resume than Alabama, and then you're going to separate, like at least there's one spot separated between Oklahoma and Alabama. Like there's one team in between. But you're going to tell me Notre Dame and Miami has the same record, and you're going to put two teams in between Notre Dame and Miami. It just makes no sense. And, you know, I would like to see Notre Dame in the college football playoff. But if it comes down to Notre Dame and Miami, like let's say BYU loses to Texas Tech, and regardless of what happens in the SEC championship game, I think Alabama should be in. If it comes down to Notre Dame and Miami, I don't know what the committee will do, but Miami should be in over Notre Dame. Because I'll try to argue this, right? Like, Stu, if I'm making the argument, or you're making the argument, why Notre Dame should be in over Miami, what's the argument?
I would say that the losses were the first 2 weeks of the season. I would say that the losses were to two very good teams, while Miami's losses were to two teams that were less good. And I would say
just pause right there because you walked right into it. It like someone could say, right? Oh, well, I think Notre Dame is better than Miami. Well, they played, and I get it was in the first week of the season. Notre Dame lost to Miami, so. And then the other one would be, well, the losses are better for Notre Dame, where they lost to Miami lost to SMU in overtime, and they lost to Louisville. Notre Dame's two losses though are to A&M and then who? Miami. So it's like I'm just trying to do this off common sense. And I thought for sure, if Notre Dame was two losses or fewer, they'd be in the college football playoff. But if BYU beats Texas Tech in the college football playoff, I don't think Notre Dame is getting in. And that's where it could get tricky for the committee, because right now they're telling you Notre Dame's better than Alabama, but we all know they're not. So that's one. And then if it does come down to, let's say we live in a world where BYU loses to Texas Tech. Let's say Alabama wins the SEC championship game. They're not pushing Georgia out. If it comes down to Notre Dame and Miami, here's the part where I won't get from the committee. This started off, I think, in the first rankings, where Notre Dame was 10, Miami was 18th. They've already shrunk the gap from 9 to 12. So unless if they pit them tonight, Like, even if they do move Alabama in front of Miami, they'll move Notre Dame down to 10. They're not going to put Miami in front of BYU. So even if you move it 10 to 12, is that enough of a gap next week when neither of these teams play, and if it comes down to Notre Dame and Miami, to change the rankings where Miami jumps Notre Dame? So what should happen and what will happen? If it comes down to Notre Dame and Miami, sorry, folks, Miami should get in. But I still think, Stu, Notre Dame will get in if it comes down to Notre Dame and Miami.
I think you're right.
None of it makes any sense.
I agree that should and what will happen are two different things. I agree that Miami should be in over Notre Dame, as much as I hate to say that, but I agree with you. I think Notre Dame will get in over Miami.
Now, Samter, you could be a sick, twisted human being from time to time. Do you want to see, like, let me just ask you this. Do you want, I know we like Tony Elliott on this show, and I like Virginia. Would you like to see a world where Virginia loses to Duke, and then we have James Madison and then potentially Tulane or James Madison and North Texas in the college football playoff? Would that intrigue you?
It would. It would. I mean, I do like Virginia, and so I want them to win because they're, you know, outside of the ASU.
Because they're Tiki Barber school.
They're my team. No. No, I mean, that's part of it. I root for Temple for some of the same reasons.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I don't watch Temple, their games, but, like, you know, when Temple's going up against, I want Temple to win because there's a background there. So,
yeah.
But also, I do have a connection with Duke also. So, but for me, I would like to see Virginia win from a personal standpoint, but from just a producer college football standpoint,
yeah,
it would be amazing if the ACC gets completely shut out. If Duke wins the ACC championship game, they don't make it in. Miami gets shut out because they choose Notre Dame, and they're always going to choose Notre Dame over Miami, let's be honest. And you get JMU and the winner of the American, which hopefully is North Texas, because I want to see more of that quarterback. I think it would be fascinating. I think it would be much fun.
Would you be rooting for BYU to beat Texas Tech this weekend? So BYU and Texas Tech goes, and we live in a world where at least two, if not all three, and it probably would be only two, of Miami, Notre Dame, and Alabama get left out. Would you be on board with that?
No, I'm not a huge BYU fan. I want Texas Tech to win and have like a strong, maybe even get a first-round bye, depending on what happens. I think they'll probably get it either way, but if they lose, they're not getting it, I don't think.
Well, if they lose, I don't think they will get it.
Right.
But I think tonight, like, this is, I'll give you how I think the bracket's going to look tonight. Ohio State's going to be one. This is on the bracket, folks. Ohio State's going to be one. Indiana's going to be two. Georgia's going to be three. Texas Tech is going to be four. I think in the 5-12 matchup, we will see Oregon be the 5, Tulane be the 12. I then think tonight the projection's going to be A&M 6, Virginia 11. I then think we will see Ole Miss be 7, Alabama be 10, and then the 8-9 matchup, Oklahoma 8, Notre Dame 9. But there's a few things to watch for tonight. Will Bama be in front of Notre Dame? What is the separation going to be between Notre Dame and Miami? And also, will we see an appearance, probably unlikely in the top 25, that gives us any indication of what would happen if Duke wins the ACC and James Madison wins their conference? Like, what will happen? And you may not even see it on the top 25 rankings, but if I'm Reese Davis tonight, or McElroy, or Galloway, like whoever's doing the show, and you have Hunter Yurcheck on, which, right, he's been on ever since Mac Rhodes, you know, resigned and all that stuff. When you've had Hunter Yurcheck on, when he did that like cringy 6-7 joke, when he's on tonight, they got to ask that question. What happens if Duke wins the ACC championship? So it's going to be fascinating. And I'll tell you, the unintended, I don't want to say consequence, I guess it's right. The unintended consequences of going to 12 have been fascinating. Because, right, didn't we think the debates were going to be, like, who would get the final spots out of the Big Ten and the SEC? Last year, the debate was, should Boise State get a bye? And it was, are you going to get two ACC teams in? And then this year, the debate could be, yeah, big brands potentially, which would work out for them, Notre Dame and Miami, you know, and Alabama. Those are all debates that are going to be up there. But the biggest controversy could potentially be the ACC getting shut out of the college football playoff if Duke wins. And remember, the ACC and the Big 12, their future of the college football playoff is fascinating because we're in a debate right now where the Big 10's being stupid and it's suggesting that I think it's 24 teams get in. The SEC is saying 16, but in the Big 10's format, they would guarantee four four schools in the college football playoff to each of the four Power Four conferences. And I don't remember how the ACC thought about that, but the Big 12, they rejected that. They didn't want that. But if you're the Big 12 in the ACC, like, hey, the Big 12 got one in last year, the ACC got two. This year, there's a possibility that the Big 12 is going to get two. They'll definitely get one. But if the ACC gets shut out altogether, I know you could say it's a one-off, just one of those wonky years where the conference wasn't that strong and the team that was in the conference championship game just had a ridiculous amount of total losses. But if the ACC gets shut out altogether, I'm curious what the reaction's going to be out of that. And if you think about it too, you're going to have Chesney leaving James Madison, Sumrall or Morris, they're leaving North Texas and Tulane. You could have an 11-12 matchup. Like, on the 11th and 12th spot be occupied by Tulane and James Madison, let's just say. And if you are the 5 or if you are the 6, right, you better not lose that game. Because that's practically a bye in the first. Like, if you told me before Oregon, before the season, they would play Tulane in the college football playoff, or you told A&M before the start of the season, they would play Tulane or James Madison or North Texas, they'd take that in a second. But if Sumrall or if Eric Morris or if Bob Chesney could find a way to get a win, oh boy, not only if you're an Oklahoma State fan, you're pumped, or you're a Florida fan, you're pumped because what they're doing on the G5 level. So if you're an Oklahoma fan, a Florida fan, or maybe even a UCLA fan, you're pumped. But geez, that would be a bad look for some of these Power Four schools if you lose to Tulane or you lose to North Texas or you lose to James Madison. But the little fella really has a seat at the table here. And we thought they would just have one seat where they always get in. But the little fella could be having two seats at the table. I never thought we'd ever see that. Never, never, never. There's some things like, I was on board last year where I said from the beginning, I remember having this debate with Hickey. I said, Hickey, they cannot guarantee the conference champions buys. And they changed that. If you would have told me last year that, hey, there's a world where one of the Power Four could be left out, where five spot, like the Power Four conference champs, where with five spots there, that one of them, one of the Power Four conference could be left out, I would have never believed that in a million years. I would have said you're effing crazy. Zach Gelb here with you on the Infinity Sports Network. We'll get to a news brief next.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
All righty, news brief time. It is the Zach Gelb Show right here on the Infinity Sports Network. Let's get it started with Drake May. He talked about the hit that was delivered on Jackson Dart last night as Jackson Dart was walking on a tightrope, and he got leveled by Christian Ellis.
You know, something that's been across the league that showed up with quarterbacks near the boundary or near the sideline, just kind of relaxing. And I think I learned last year the Chargers, I had one of that same sideline over there. I got smacked on the sideline. So just be smart and know you almost got to accelerate or get down or, you know, do something over there. But I think, you know, Jackson, he makes some good plays with his feet, so he's tough to handle.
And let's hear from Jackson Dart and the big hit that he took in the game last night.
Look, I'm going to keep playing aggressive. No, hopefully everybody can take a second to watch my tape going back to high school and realize that this is not a shock. I play the game aggressively. I took one hit that people are talking about. I slid, got out of the way of a lot of hits. So I appreciate people, you know, wanting to, you know, me to be healthy and all that stuff. And I want to be healthy too. But I play this game aggressive. So I'm not going to just change how I play the game.
Here's the thing. When you're playing in high school, you're not having guys the size of the NFL hit you at the speed that they're moving. Same for college. And also, I appreciate the intent behind his aggressiveness and his desire, but there's a difference in trying to play that way and then also playing recklessly. Like, his intentions are good, but now it's reckless. And it's already cost him. And it's going to continue to cost them. And you just hope that the injury, when it happens, isn't that bad. Because you keep on playing like that in the NFL, you're going to get drilled, and you're going to be out for a long time. Jackson Dart, will you keep on playing aggressively?
Absolutely. Like I said, I played like this my whole life. Like, you turn on my high school tape, you turn on my college tape. Like, it's not like a shocker to anybody. Like, it's just, it's how I've played. Felt like if you just watch the game, like, I did slide. I did avoid a lot of hits. So, it's like, you're going to get hit. It's football.
Second time in the last month that Abdul Carter has been punished by the Giants and has to miss some snaps to start the game. This is Abdul Carter, who's benched the entire quarter, first quarter last night, on being benched to start the contest.
It happens.
What happened?
I ain't gonna get into detail. Like I said, it happens.
Why? Why, Abdul? Like, for
asking me the same question, I just answered.
You know, I say the S word all the time. I can't say it on the radio. But if you did something wrong, there's optics, and getting in front of your locker and just say, hey, bleep happens, when you're the bleep that's happening, it's a bad look for Abdul Carter. He's got to grow up. Joe Shane and Abdul Carter's benching.
Abdul's a young man that's 21 years old, that's smart and understands the magnitude of, you know, his actions, and also understands what it means to be a pro. And these kids are 21 years old, and they're thrust in the spotlight in New York City, and it's not always going to be perfect. People make mistakes. Nobody's perfect. And part of our job is to develop them as football players, but also as people. And we will continue to do that with everybody in this organization.
I don't like that answer. I don't. This is now the second time this has happened. The second time you needed a punitive action for someone that was taken early on in the NFL draft. He's supposed to be a franchise cornerstone player for you. Don't tell me he's young. Don't tell me the pressure of New York. First time, slapping the wrist, it happens. Second time, no thank you. Carl Banks, Giant legend, was on WFAN Giants Radio Network, and he responded to the Abdul Carter benching.
I mean, it's time for the kid to grow up, but I mean, you got, I don't advocate teammates fighting with each other, but it just seems like if we're just finding this out now, this has got to have been a pattern going on all year.
Like, exactly.
You gotta care enough. That's losing football. That's a losing locker room. If you know, when you have these types of things and you don't care enough to be engaged and you have to be disciplined twice.
Well,
how many other times has this happened and they just kind of overlooked it?
Well, obviously it's happened a lot.
And it's disappointing because I expect more from the young man. And I, again, have been a big defender saying, oh, he'll be okay. But here's the thing. You can't care more about this stuff than the kids themselves. So, I mean, he's got to grow up, shape up, and hopefully, you know, whatever happens at the end of this year, but next year, he gets his head on straight and gets focused and has someone that can keep him accountable from day one.
It's a good take by Carl. And you're on the Giants broadcast, so it's not always easy to deliver a take like that, but he's absolutely right. And the Giants' problem is, like, where's the leadership? You're in a team that's got some players that have been in the league now on the defensive side of the ball that are established. Where are they holding this kid accountable? And I can't even put on the coach. Like, they have no coaches. That's the thing. You got rid of the head coach. You got rid of the defensive coordinator. I'm not saying those are the wrong decisions, but I'll play you Mike Kafka here. Does this guy sound like he has any pulse or any, you know, he has a good hand on this situation and holding the situation tight, and he knows what's going on, pulse of the situation? No. Like, I'll play you Mike Kafka here in just a second. He made the decision, right? I'm assuming this is his decision. He was asked about it afterwards, and this is what he said.
Why was Abdul not out there the first couple series?
That was a coach's decision, my decision.
Okay.
Why did you make that decision?
Just based on how we went during the week. Just that was the decision I wanted to make.
Another disciplinary reason?
No, it was just my decision to not play him.
There was a report that he had was missed part of or all of a team event. Is that true?
No, it was just strictly my decision.
How concerning is it now? This is the second time in 3 weeks he's had to be benched in this way.
Yeah, no, it's unfortunate, but you know that's the way we kind of work with it this week. That was my decision to do that. Those are tough decisions to make, but that was my decision. And again, the kid, nothing with him. Everything that we did was my decision. Obviously, I'm sure he wasn't happy about it, which I understand. But I thought that was the best thing for the team, and it was my decision to move forward with it. And that's where we're at.
My decision. Why was the decision made? If this was the first time it happened, I understand not verbally undressing the player. Protecting your player, do that behind the scenes. It's not the second time. And you know that this kid cares about his public image in Abdul Carter. You needed to say why last night. It's a bad job by Mike Kafka. Let's hear from Mike Tomlin on Steelers fans booing him over the weekend.
Football is our game. We're in the sport entertainment business. And so if you root for the Steelers, entertaining them is winning. And so when you're not winning, it's not entertaining. And if you've been in this business, you understand that. And so I respect it. I share frustrations. I understand what makes this thing go. And winning is what makes this thing go.
It would have been funny if he pulled the, I do not care. That would have been really funny from one Mike Tom. Let's go to Lane Kiffin on why he chose LSU.
At LSU is the best job in football. When you take the history, tradition, passion, and the great players in the state of Louisiana, no one can argue that when you're in Tiger Stadium on Saturday night, there is nothing like it. And this place is built for championships with championship expectations. We understand that. But as an elite competitor, that's exactly what you want. And that's why we're here.
Let's also get to Lane Kiffin talking about Ed Orgeron.
Actually, we're going by Tiger Stadium. I called one person. I called Ed Orgeron. And I said, hey, man, all I can do is, man, this place just makes me want to talk like you right now. I did. I was like, we were in the car, and the kids were in there, and I was like, and the coaches, and they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. I'm like channeling Ed right now. I was like, I'm feeling him. Like, I rolled down the window, and I was like, go Tigers to the fans.
Go Tigers.
And I'm like, so I called Ed. I said, I don't know what's going on.
Go Tigers.
I'm feeling you right now. And he's like, coach, you're at the best place in America. So I feel
coach,
that.
You're at the best place in America.
I love Ed Orgeron. I think he's coming back to college football, by the way. Just some people I talked to. He's got a few job offers on the table. I don't know if it's to be a head coach, but if he's coming back to be a coordinator or an assistant coach or something along those lines, you know, I would imagine with his relationship with Lane Kiffin that maybe it is at LSU. I don't know that for fact, but I know that he has some job offers on the table, and we'll see how they play on out over the next week while these teams continue to build their staffs. I don't know if it's going to be for head coach somewhere, but if he's back as an assistant somewhere, I would love to see him with Lane Kiffin at LSU. Let's get to Lane Kiffin on the Ole Miss fans that were angry at the airport as he was departing Oxford, Mississippi to go to Baton Rouge.
Man, it's the passion of the SEC, so I understand that. So I don't get emotional with it yesterday like so many people get emotional, you know, like that, and they change like that because we spent 6 years there, that airport scene, and Knox and I driving and people trying to run us off the road, man. And the things they said to us, we got here and we had been here for 6 minutes. And how, we love you, coach, you're the best ever. And like, we've only been here 6 minutes, we ain't done anything for you yet. But that's the SEC. And I've been around long enough to know that. And it's just the passion of the SEC. And so I'm not upset at those reactions by fans, by people. And I think that people get really upset when you leave somewhere because they feel hurt because you're doing a really good job. They ain't going to the airport and driving from all over, okay, to say those things and yell those things, okay, and try to run you off the road if you were doing bad. So, you know, I just look at it as passionate people, and then it means they really liked what we were doing there.
Let's go to Ole Miss's defensive tackle, John Seaton. He trolled Lane Kiffin with a skit.
All right, guys, bring it up. Great job this year. Amazing season. The best we've ever had. Moving forward to next year. That's me. Hello.
Hello?
Bye. What's up, man? How we living?
You said how much?
All right, guys. You know what? I mean, you understand, right?
Wait. Samter and Stu, he just put this out there on, like, TikTok, this guy? Or something like that?
He sure did.
That's amazing.
And, you know, what you don't see in the audio is him walking away, giving the peace sign. I mean, that's a player who's just, he feels abandoned by his coach.
You know what's funny? When you Google John Seaton, you know what pops up first? Internet personality. John Seaton is defensive tackle for Ole Miss Rebels football team. He wears the number 92, but it comes up first on his bio, internet personality. So that's a guy that's gonna do well for himself, I would imagine. I'm sure that just went absolutely viral. I'm looking at his stats this year. He has one tackle. Is he even on the team this year? I don't know if he even played in a game yet this year, John Seeden. He had one tackle last year. Is he still on the football team?
Same from what I read, yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Alrighty, let's keep it moving. We continue here on the News Brief on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. I know we have some John Sumrall cuts. Let's play one or two of them from yesterday at his news conference.
Yeah, no two people are the same, okay? And Coach Meyer, you coached G5 football, I think, right? Yeah, Kurt Cignetti coached G5, I think. I actually coached against Kurt some. No two people are the same. You know, just because you're a reporter, I may have had an interaction with another reporter and not liked it, doesn't mean I'm going to judge you that way. Judge me for who I am. I'm a winner. We're going to win. And just give me a shot. Believe in me. Here's the deal. I need everybody pulling the rope the same direction. Because if anybody's pulling the other direction, it don't make the job easier. It makes it harder. If we're all Gators, we all want to win, let's do this together. You want to go fast, go alone. You want to go far, go together. Let's go together.
I can believe in John Sumrall. I think this guy's going to be a really good coach. I know Florida's a tough job right now, but from a personality standpoint, if you can't get Lane Kiffin, I think John Sumrall's a pretty damn good hire for the Gators. Finally, Clark Lee, the head football coach of Vanderbilt, he calls out the College Football Playoff Committee for bias against Vanderbilt. This is on SEC This Morning on the SEC Network on to ESPN.
I don't know a world that exists where this team doesn't belong in that field. I'm learning right now about all the flaws and how we determine who's in, who's out. I'm very interested in fighting against any perception. I think there's a bias against Vanderbilt. I think we have been ignored early in the season. We were not given a chance. It took us winning our way into the conversation, and all we've done is line them up and knock them down. And obviously we got two flaws on our schedule, a loss at Alabama, a loss at Texas. Both those games, we were in it in the fourth quarter. Listen, we'll play anywhere and everywhere. Put the ball down in the parking lot. Anyone they want to put us against in that playoff, if they want us to play in, we'll play in. If they want us to play three games to get in, we'll play three games to get in. This team deserves to be there, and I'm proud of what we've done, but we deserve a chance to win a national championship.
If you told me that Vandy, before the start of the season, would have two losses in the regular season, I would say they'd be in the College Football Playoff. You know what's it's kind of upsetting here? Because they lost to Alabama and Texas, but I wonder, because like Oklahoma has two losses, they're all the way, you know, up, and then Vanderbilt's not projected in the bracket. I wonder if Vanderbilt played Oklahoma, what the outcome of that game would be. And quite frankly, I think I would take Vanderbilt to defeat Oklahoma. But it's just, you got the short end of the stick. You're not going to get in. If Alabama is fighting for their life and you lost to Alabama, I just don't think you're going to get in. Alrighty, Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network. We'll take a timeout. Come on back. One more segment left to play. Update time. We'll send it back to New York City studios. First, here's the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. Alrighty, wrapping up shop on this Tuesday. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Stu and Samter, I'm going to put you on the spot here real quickly. So, Kalani Sitake is not going to be the next head football coach at Penn State. The fact that it was Penn State even thought it was going to be Kalani Sitake was stunning. Not that, hey, I'd rather be the head football coach at BYU over Penn State. I'd rather be the head football coach at Penn State, even though Kalani Sitake is a BYU man. But when this search started and James Franklin got fired, which was the right decision. Now, what has happened after that, there's a lot to question. But getting rid of James Franklin, I had zero issue with. I actually applauded Penn State for it. But if you would have told me that day that it would have been Kalani Sitake, I would have never believed it. But now it seems like Kalani Sitake, according to Pete Thamel, is going to say thanks but no thanks to Penn State. Got what he needed to hear. Got the investments that he wanted in the way to run the football program from BYU. And he's going to stay at a place that he calls home. So if we had to skip around the room right now, where we're looking at all these options in college football and all these coaches that have either left their current program to go to another program or where the speculation is at, who's going to be the next head football coach at Penn State? That's the question. So who is going to be the next head football coach at Penn State? Because today is Tuesday, December 2nd. You know, Eric Morris is the next head football coach at Oklahoma State. James Franklin is the next head football coach at Virginia Tech. John Sumrall's in the swamp. Lane Kiffin's at LSU. Golding's at Ole Miss. Will Stein is at Kentucky. Alex Golish is at Auburn. Arkansas, Ryan Silverfield. You saw Jim Mora go and take the job at Colorado State. A lot of movement. So who's the next head football coach at Penn State? Stu, take a stab at it. What's your guess?
I'll go Brian Hartline. I feel like the options there are not many options there. He's one of the decent ones, I guess. So I know he doesn't have any head coaching experience, really. But I think Brian Hartline right now is for me, the favorite.
Samter?
So I was discussing this before the show with Penn State Nittany Lion fan extraordinaire Ryan Hickey.
You could just call him a homer. That's okay.
Homer Hickey. And I was like, well, what happened to Satake isn't the guy? And he goes, I want them to make one last push for Bob Chesney of JMU. Now, JMU, Chesney is off to UCLA, but he hasn't officially signed the deal.
It hasn't been introduced yet.
Yeah. Correct. So, technically, could he pull a Josh McDaniels and agree to be the coach and then back away and take another job? And would anybody blame him if Penn State says, hey, Bob Chesney, come over here, leave UCLA instead of UCLA? I don't think anybody would blame him if he had Penn State versus UCLA. So.
Does UCLA even have fans? Like, I'm being serious. It seems like there's the old coach, Foster, had to explain where the school was. It's UCLA, for crying out loud.
I think that Foster didn't know what the hell he was doing. That was as big of a dumpster fire as I've ever seen as a coach. But you do have the Southern California and the Southwest, you know, recruits there that, like, if you have a good recruiting coach, there's money at UCLA, and there's a lot of talent out there. I just don't know if UCLA can pull it, but still, man, there is opportunity for the right guy.
I see Josh Pate is saying that they should go pursue Matt Campbell. At this point, I don't think Matt Campbell 3-4 weeks ago would have been a great hire for Penn State, but at this point, it would be a good hire for what the circumstances is. I would still throw a bag at Kenny Dillingham and make him an offer he can't refuse, but I don't know how realistic Campbell and Dillingham are. Stu already said Hartline. Samter just went with Chesney. Could it be Jeff Brohm? You know, it took Jeff Brohm forever to go back to Louisville. Is he going to leave Louisville this quickly to go take Penn State? I guess it's plausible. I'm going to guess Manny Diaz. Let's say Duke upsets Virginia in the ACC championship game. Diaz and Kraft know each other well. He was at Penn State a few years ago. I know it only lasted 17 days, but Pat hired Manny at Temple. It could honestly be Terry Smith at this point. Oh, that would be a disaster. I know that the Penn State are like, oh, hire Terry. There's no way you actually want a Terry Smith when they fire James Franklin. So I'll say Manny Diaz.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detecttheSOS.com today.
Thanks to TikTok ads, I was able to open up a business with my childhood friend and even hire employees.
My name is Julian, and I am one of the founders of the Snacks Lab. We are an exotic snack company. We import snacks from all over the world. We had over $100,000 in sales from our TikTok ads in the first month. So our orders went from 5 a day to over 250 orders a day. You definitely have to use TikTok ads.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.